I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today's Friday, April 7th, 2017. Let the record reflect the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, Senator Stedman, Senator Hughes, and Senator Wilikowski. Thanks to Ann and Tom who are helping us out with record keeping. Today we have four items on the agenda. First, we're going to take back up Senate Bill 65. Then we'll go back to Senate Bill 28 and then Senate Bill 89. And finally, we'll have our first hearing on Senate Bill 86. So first of all, we'll start out with Senate Bill 65. This bill was first heard on April 3rd. Public testimony was opened and closed. The Departments of Transportation and Public Facilities, the Department of Natural Resources, and the court system, as well as Senator Coghill, all requested some changes to meet the intent of the legislation. So we have a proposed committee substitute before us. Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, I move that we have the CES for Senate Bill 65, work order 30-LS0387 Romeo as our working document for the bill.
Are there, I will object for explanation of changes, and my staff, Mr. Archigialopsis, will go through those changes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Ike Gilopso, staff to Senator Giesel and the Senate Resources Committee, and continual student of bad grammar. Madam Chair, with your permission, we will use the document entitled CS for Senate Bill 65, Version Romeo, Correct Explanation of Changes from Version Juliet to Version Romeo, list those changes. I would note, Madam Chair, that we have Mr. Cox from the Department of Natural Resources and Mrs. Fair from the Department of Transportation Public Facilities to answer any specific questions. The first change, Madam Chair, in the proposed committee substitute, is on page 1, lines 10 through 12, and that simplifies and clarifies language stating that protecting fish and wildlife habitat will ensure the continued recreational use of the proposed area. The second change, Madam Chair, is on page 2, line 10, and this adds the words "to the extent workload permits," and that's to protect the state against any potential action regarding timely creation and implementation of a management plan, particularly since there is no funding attached to this piece of legislation at this time. The third change and fourth changes, Madam Chair, both remove languages that were in the previous version of the bill, version Juliet. First removal was found on page 2, line 15 through 16, and that was language that prevented the Department of Natural Resources from selling surface estate within the proposed use area. The second removal of language in the previous version was in the previous page 2, lines 23 through 25, and that required the Department of Natural Resources to identify wetlands within the proposed use area. The fifth change, Madam Chair, can be found on page 2, lines 20 through 24 of the proposed committee substitute. And this clarifies language stating that the state cannot exercise eminent domain to add private land for placement into the proposed use area. And it also specifically clarifies that any privately owned parcels within the proposed area are protected from eminent domain for inclusion. This was related to the discussion at the last hearing with the Department of Transportation. And finally, Madam Chair, page 6, lines 8 through 18 is the sixth and final change. And this restructures Section 2 at the recommendation of the Alaska Court System and the Department of Natural Resources to conform to the current process of adopting a bail schedule, and also removes the language in the previous version that had unintentionally placed the Alaska Supreme Court out of compliance with the adoption of a bail schedule. Those are the changes, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I will remove my objection, thereby adopting the committee substitute. Is there further objection? All right. Hearing none, then the committee substitute is before us. I also want to welcome Senator Meyer, who joined us several minutes ago. So that brings the bill before the committee. We do have DOT and the Department of Natural Resources both online for any questions. So committee members, questions or discussion? All right. Seeing none, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the work to clarify some of those things. So with that, I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill 65, work order Romeo, from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will move. We will take a brief at ease to sign the documents. on the record. We have a second item today on today's agenda. That's Senate Bill 28. We heard Senate Bill 28 on April 5th. We took public testimony and then concluded it. It was closed. We have the bill back before us. This is the municipal land selection for the Petersburg Borough, offered by Senator Stedman. Senator Stedman, any closing remarks?
Just very briefly, Madam Chairman, I think it's nice that the communities around the state are continually to boroughize as we pursue our constitutional mandate to see that the whole state's boroughized. We've got 50 years behind us. Hopefully we'll be done before the end of the next 50 years. With that, Madam Chairman, I look forward to the committee taking action on the bill.
Very good. Thank you. Are there questions or comments from committee members?
Comments?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
First of all, I appreciate the way that this has come about. I think this has worked out fairly well. And then the only other thing is Petersburg got a new chunk of my heart because my son married a gal from Petersburg. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to go explore the boundaries. But their economic diversification potential just sounds great to me. And so I think this is an excellent issue. So,
very good. Further comments, questions? Very good. Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, I move that we move from the committee the Senate Bill 28, work order Delta, from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will move from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. We'll take up the third item on today's agenda. That is Senate Bill 89. This is the Shellfish Enhancement Projects. The bill was first heard on April 5th, though it is actually a bill that we heard last year and did significant work on. Public testimony was opened and closed on April 5th. We have the bill before the committee for further questions or discussion. Any questions? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Fish and Game is here. Few questions for them, if I could, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Fish and Game is here, as well as the Alaska Fisheries Development Corporation. Oh, they're not online. They're not available. Mr. Bowers, welcome. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. So I asked some questions about this last week and doing a little bit more research on just trying to figure out how cost recovery works and how it would work under this bill, because it seems we have a system in place for cost recovery for salmon, and it might be helpful if you explain that, how that works, and then how that would work under this, because it doesn't really seem like it would fit under the way we do salmon, and I don't know that the language we have really addresses the situation. So I guess if you could talk a little bit about how it's done now with salmon and then how you think it would apply in this case under this bill.
Through the chair, well, first, for the record, my name is Forrest Bowers. I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. With regard to cost recovery, there are two approaches that we use in the salmon enhancement program. The first is a cost recovery fishery whereby the permittee, the hatchery operator, typically contracts with one or more harvesting vessels, and they harvest salmon very close to the hatchery, salmon that have hatchery-produced fish that have returned to the hatchery. They harvest those fish that are excess to broodstock needs, and they sell those to pay for hatchery operating costs. So that's one approach where it's a contracted fishery. The second approach happens, say, in like a remote release site where salmon fry are reared away from the hatchery, and they return to this remote release site, and a common property fishery occurs there. And anyone who harvests salmon in that zone, that designated area surrounding the remote release site, pays an assessment fee to fund those operations. And those monies, under both approaches, those monies are collected by the state of Alaska and then redistributed back to the hatchery operators. Both of those approaches are embodied in the language in SB 89. As we discussed the other day, because shellfish don't return, you know, they don't home to a natal area to reproduce like salmon, they're going to be mixed. The hatchery-produced shellfish are going to be mixed with naturally produced animals out in the wild. So most likely that assessment fee approach would be the cost recovery model most likely used. So anyone who's participating in the common property fishery in the area the enhancement occurred would pay an assessment fee to fund enhancement operations.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. And I guess question one is how far do shellfish typically migrate? And then question two would be how do you define a special harvest area? How do you define a terminal harvest area? Mm-hmm. When you have shellfish, it's not a problem with salmon because salmon, fortunately, mm-hmm. come back to where they originally started. But with shellfish, you put them down and they just sort of migrate all over, I assume. So question one, yeah, how far do they migrate typically? And then how do you define special harvest area, terminal harvest area for shellfish?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. It's a good question. Some shellfish don't migrate at all. For example, clams, scallops, they're essentially a sessile organism. They don't move much. Crabs, they can walk around, but they require specific habitat in order to be successful. And so we have designed our fishery management areas around stock boundaries that are sort of the known range of these distinct stocks. And so in the case of, say, a crab stock like Pribilof blue king crab that's a species of interest in this bill, we have a registration area where the fishery occurs that the Board of Fisheries has defined. And so that most likely would be the assessment area. It's sort of the known range of the stock and where the fishery occurs, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
And then how do you expect that there will be a number of wild stock that would be caught, and is that money then given back to the hatchery when the wild stocks are caught? Is there some sort of genetic mm-hmm. testing to see that? Is this establishing? So I guess that's one question.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, knowing that in some cases the hatchery produced shellfish would be mixed with naturally produced animals, there is no. For species like crab, say there's really no way to mark them right now to differentiate them from hatchery and wild produced animals. So yeah, they would be mixed, indistinguishable in the fishery, and that cost recovery would just accrue against all the catch in that area.
Okay.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I brought this question up the last time, and maybe I got answered, and I just went over my head, which is possible. So on page 3, line 3, where it says the notice of hearing shall be published in a newspaper of general circulation. And it just seems like to me that we could save some money if we just did it online, which I think most people probably get their news online. Is that just standard procedure, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that's correct. It's my understanding that that's standard Alaska Administrative Procedures Act language. We've noted that ourselves. This is the bare minimum requirement. We would probably do more than that in terms of noticing, posting on our website, emailing. We have lists of stakeholders that we know are interested in certain topics. So there's other ways of outreach, but this is sort of the bare minimum, and as I understand it, it's the APA requirement. Madam Chair.
Yes, follow up, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we could put newspaper and or online of general circulation, but I guess we can worry about that later. Pretty small detail. Let's see. I think I had another question here. Page 4, line 9. Or actually, it's number 10. We say within a reasonable period. Is reasonable period defined anywhere?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, not in this bill.
Okay.
It would likely be laid out in the implementing regulations that we would adopt.
Okay. I think that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Any other questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Would this bill have any impact on harvest quotas?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, well, if it's successful, it would increase them, potentially. I mean, that's the intent.
Yes, follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
I had asked at the last hearing if there was any scientific opposition within Fish and Game, any opposition within Fish and Game from the biologists or anyone. I guess the non-political people is what I'm trying to get at. What were the results of your investigation on that?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I haven't had any opposition expressed to me directly from our staff. I asked other members of our leadership team that have worked on this bill, and they hadn't heard any either, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
I think one of the concerns that was raised by one of the callers was the ability to stop permits that were already issued, and I don't know if that's addressed in here or not. That was a comment somebody had last time.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yeah, that's on page 4, starting in, on line 8, so that's in section 3, I believe. Let me just confirm that. That's in section 3.
Got it.
Yeah, that's correct. Section 3, page 4, starting on line 8, that provision talks about alteration, suspension, or revocation of a permit. Madam Chair, it lays out a process for that.
Thanks.
Further questions? All right, seeing none, we did work on this pretty long last time, but thank you very much, Mr. Bowers. I appreciate your expert answers and
you're welcome. My pleasure.
Knowledge of the bill. Thank you. So with that, Mr. Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Just like to convey your gratitude on behalf of Senator Stevens for hearing the bill. This is a blanket statement on helping to improve and diversify Alaska's fisheries portfolio.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Lampkin? All right, seeing none, thank you. So is there any further discussion? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, again, this may seem minor in the text of things, but I'm not the best in grammar. I went to school in Nebraska. But line 11 on page 4, where it says in the discretion of the commissioner. I believe that should be at the discretion of the commissioner. And I don't know if that's something the next committee can fix or if we want to fix that. I know if Representative Gruenberg was here, he would fix it.
Senator Meyer, how about if we suggest to Mr. Lampkin that the Finance Committee take up that grammar question? That's where the bill goes next.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Also, in commenting to the question on page 3 about the publishing in the newspaper, that is, as in fact, template language. It's part of state law now. We did attempt to change that about 3 years ago and not require print notification, but that bill never passed. So.
Try it again.
I'll let you do that. Okay, all right. All right. If there are no further questions or discussion, Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, with that, I move that we move the Senate Bill 89, version alpha, from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will move to the Finance Committee next. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. We're back on the record. We will take up our fourth and final item for today's agenda, which is Senate Bill 86, sponsored by Senator Coghill. This bill would grant flexibility to the Alaska Railroad Corporation to make longer-term lease and land sales without legislative approval. So, Senator Coghill, if you would like to make opening remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'd like to do is have a couple of opening remarks and then turn it over to Reneva Moss, who is my chief of staff and who is really the detail person on this particular issue. The high-level question is the railroad has the authority to lease land but not sell land without legislative approval. And what's happened in my community and other communities is there's a lot of subdivisible land and business land that will not lease that land because of the equity issue. So this would probably further up the private property issue and give the railroad some much-needed revenue that they won't otherwise get. I've had some controversy down through the years with the Alaska Railroad on their land management issues, and I think that we'll probably continue to have that with them. But this was a solution that was brought to us by the railroad, and I was willing to entertain it. But I will confess I've had to depend upon Reneva Moss to make sure that the details were handled. So with that, I'd probably turn it over to her, Madam Chair. Thank you for hearing it.
Very good. Mrs. Moss.
Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. As Senator Coghill said, the railroad came to Senator Coghill to introduce this legislation. And what it does is it repeals the current requirements for the legislature to approve land sales by the railroad and land leases that are over 95 years in length. And, Madam Chair, this bill would enable the railroad to sell land on which development wouldn't occur with a land lease, such as residential estate, residential land, as Senator Coghill mentioned. And there are on the online is the chairman of the board, John Cook, who will give you some of the logic behind why this bill has been introduced, and the fact that we have at least two areas that are interested in purchasing Alaska Railroad land for the purpose of residential subdivisions. And finally, the railroad feels that this bill will allow them to monetize non-performing land assets, generate cash flow to respond to opportunities in the real estate market, and enhance the overall real estate portfolio of the railroad and allow it to comply with state law, because state law requires them to be self-sufficient. And this is an avenue for this. I just wanted to read a line out of this letter from Aklutna, and you have four letters of support. But Aklutna said, first of all, our corporation has been involved in real estate development in Alaska for quite some time. We see great potential in this legislation for us to work with the railroad as development opportunities arise to move quickly to take advantage of those opportunities. SB 86 will bring the Alaska Railroad Corporation into alignment with other state entities that we've worked with in the past, such as DOT, and to be able to sell land without legislative approval. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to go through the bill. And then Chairman Cook has been invited to testify. And we also have on the line the president of the Alaska Railroad, Bill O'Leary, and the vice president of real estate, Jim Kubitz.
Yes.
And they are in questions.
Those folks are online, but if you take us through the sectional first, then we'll go to them for testimony.
And, Madam Chair, basically what this bill does, as I read through it, you'll see that. It takes each section of AS 4240, which is the Alaska Railroad Corporation statutes, and it deletes each place where it says that it requires legislative approval. So in Section 1, AS 4240-120 is the delegation of powers and duties to the chief executive officer. So Section 1 deletes the requirement for legislative approval of land transactions under the statute affecting utility corridors, land leases, or land disposal if the land sale or lease is longer than 95 years. Section 2 is AS 4240-120C, and that is transactions requiring board approval. It, again, deletes the language that requires legislative approval. Section 3 is 4240-350B. That's the authorization of the use of a utility corridor. Again, it deletes the language that requires legislative approval. Section 4 is 4240-350C, granting easements on railroad land. It removes legislative approval. Section 5 is 4240-350D, lease or disposal of land at fair market value. It doesn't change leases or fair market value. It simply removes the requirement for legislative approval. Section 6 is repealed and reenacted. First of all, it deletes from AS 4240-352, which is the sale of land not necessary for railroad purposes, language requiring the board to make findings that land is not necessary for railroad purposes and that the sale is in the best interest of the state. And Mr. Cook will explain the logic behind this. It also deletes the requirement to provide notice to persons having leasehold interest in the land proposed to be sold and offered, and it deletes the provision that requires them to offer the leaseholders the right of first refusal. Again, he will expand on this, but they feel it's very important to know that if land is sold to someone, the lease is held harmless. So if they purchase the land and there is a lease active, they have to honor the lease. It's not affected at all. And Section 6 also deletes from that section the requirement of legislative approval. Section 7 repeals AS 4240-285, which is legislative approval required. So the language of the repealed statute is, unless the legislature approves the action by law, the corporation may not, one, exchange, donate, sell, or otherwise convey its entire interest in land, and four, lease land for a period in excess of 95 years unless the corporation reserves the right to terminate the lease if the land is needed for railroad purposes. And Section 8 has an immediate effective date. And that is the section.
Thank you very much, Reneva. Any questions at this time for Reneva or for Senator Coghill? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the invited testimony then. I'll just kind of start at the top here. John Cook is online, chairman of the board. Mr. Cook, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome. If you would give us your testimony, introducing yourself first for the record.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Cook. I am chair of the board of directors of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. I'd like to thank you for your time today and for Senator Coghill and Reneva for explaining the bill here to you this afternoon. You've got the talking points and a variety of information that Reneva has given you, so I guess I'd just like to go through a kind of a high-level view of why we're doing this and address a couple of the questions that were done. The railroad was given an endowment, and the state was given an endowment of land when it purchased the railroad. That was one of the most valuable, assets that came along with the purchase of the railroad. Its lease revenue, predominantly in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Whittier, Seward, and the Healy area, has generated revenues that have sustained the corporation through trying times and years such as we're having this year. And looking at the history of that land, though, one thing that hasn't been done through either federal or state ownership is there's been very little, sales of the land that have occurred. You'll notice in your packet that it talks about sales of land that have occurred and have been approved by the legislature, and there's only three sales that have or transfers that have happened, and they were all to one was to Eklutna Inc., but the other two were to Eklutna Inc., and one was to DOT. So, you can just see that there have not been many sales since state ownership, and I think the predominant reason that this hasn't occurred, frankly, is the legislative process itself. The fact that a private individual or a developer would have to go through the process of getting a bill introduced passed and signed into law by the governor is just an inherent deterrent to anyone even attempting to try to purchase land from the railroad. And what we found is, frankly, that we're leaving money on the table by only being able to lease land. There's parcels of land that can be used for single-family homes. We've got one here in Fairbanks, Chena Landings, that's right off of Phillips Field and Pegger Road. It's a beautiful piece of riverfront real estate for those of you that are familiar with Fairbanks, right on the Chena River. Utilities are in, beautiful southern exposure. Those lots should have some of the most expensive homes in Fairbanks there, and that subdivision has sat vacant for 16 years because, for Fairbanks, the ability to put a single-family home on leased land, it's not there. The market's not there, and frankly, the financing's not there. So, we've got those types of lands. We've got remote and rural lands, which Tri-Valley Subdivision, you'll hear from perhaps some of the folks in your packet, you'll see, or if Mayor Walker calls in from Denali Borough, you'd hear there's an area where we have single-family homes in a rural area. Those hands should be, or those properties should be in the hands of the folks that have lived there for a long time. The Alaska Railroad doesn't need to be in the business of single-family homes. It's not what we're good at. And then lastly, we've got some of these buckets of land that I would say are kind of below market leases, including Ship Creek and Anchorage. And what's happened there, again, because the railroad is a political entity, and we charge fair market value, there have been, pressures to try to curb some of those increases that have happened as the real estate market's dramatically improved in Anchorage. The situation that you end up with then is that you have leases that are less than half of fair market value, because of these lease caps that have been put into place. Yet, we have some of the same folks that lease that land that want to pay fair market value to buy it. So, for us to take, and convert something that's at 50% of fair market value to 100% of fair market value is an opportunity that we just have to take advantage of. So these are some of the reasons that we'd like to do this. And again, the legislative approval process is something that just is really frankly terrifying to some people and just off-putting to the development community. So, there's two things that you have that Reneva discussed in the bill that we would like to be taken out other than the legislative approval process. One is the right of first refusal. And the reason that we've asked for this to be removed is that, as somebody that's in the real estate business, and I've got a long, background in real estate development, having a right of first refusal is a severe impediment to being able to market a piece of property. You could have a piece of property down in Ship Creek where an individual comes in to purchase the land and does several hundred thousand dollars of due diligence, gets all the way to the finish line and is trumped by somebody that says, well, thanks for doing all that work. I'm just going to go ahead and exercise my right of first refusal. So it's not something that's commonly done. I don't do it. I mean, I can think out of all the buildings that are company owns up here. We've done it on one property out of a very large portfolio of real estate. So it's not something that most people, typically do to begin with. To the extent, it's certainly not the railroad's position that we would try to sell land that's being leased by somebody else. I just don't see scenarios, where that would be some common, practice that the railroad would engage in. But in the event that it does need to happen, and it did happen, the existing leaseholder would be protected by that lease. Any time that you have an assignment of lease, that purchaser would be bound by the terms and conditions of that lease. So the leaseholders would be affected. But, I can tell you with complete certainty that having that right of first refusal will prevent people from looking at that property and also prevent us from obtaining, the highest value that we can to maximize our returns to the shareholders, which is the state of Alaska. Lastly, as far as a best interest finding and some of those other formal things that are required to me, when you have a real estate transaction placed in front of you, whether it's a lease or a sale, you make an economic decision. So coming up with a formal best interest finding to me seems, repetitive and redundant. Either the deal, makes sense and is at fair market value or it's not. And so to me, it's just something where, again, it adds a layer in, it slows the railroad down in terms of being able to react and being able to put, deals together in a timely manner. And I can tell you with some of the other, state agencies that are here that do sell land, the length of time that it takes to get a deal done, it can be an impediment. And, we want to be able to react as quickly as we can and to be able to put deals together as quickly as we can, because that's just what consumers expect, even in the commercial world. But those are the two reasons that we've asked for those to be removed, and I probably talked long enough. So if you all have any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cook. Senator Von Imhoff has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Cook. This is Senator Von Imhoff. So I do have a question about the first right of refusal. So I am looking at a couple letters that you have. One were on this particular issue. One was from the Denali Borough, where they stated that the Alaska Railroad land is currently leased to the Usabelli coal mine for the development of a residential subdivision at the center of the Healy community. And then there's another letter from the Usabelli coal mine that does, in fact, confirm, upon the passage of Senate Bill 86, Usabelli coal mine would be interested in exploring the purchase of the Tri-Valley subdivision land from the Alaska Railroad. So they are the current lessors. So under this bill, would they be denied first refusal to purchase this land?
would, or through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Usabelli Corporation is the lessor. We do not have there's not a sublease that we have with, you know, those individual tenants. What would likely happen is that Usabelli would purchase that land and turn around and sell it to its, sell it to individual parcels to those that wish to purchase them. But again, I can't speak to what Usabelli's, intents were. But our relationship is with Usabelli, so I would assume they would purchase the entire subdivision and sell so lots accordingly.
Yes, so are
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Are they the current, do they lease in the land in the Denali, or yes, the Healy community right now? Do they lease the entire parcel at this time?
Yes.
So could they then be provided an opportunity to make a bid on the land prior to you putting it out to market to others?
Well, I can tell you this. The intent... And again, this all has to run through the committee, but our intent would not be to put it out, there's certain parcels like Chena Landings that we would advertise straight away, but existing parcels that have people on them, the natural tendency would be for that lessor to make an offer on it. So we don't intend to solicit third parties to come and purchase that land. So I would, certainly encourage, Usabelli to do that, and, that would be the first, offer that we'd look at. So our intent, again, is not to have third parties look at land that's underneath existing leaseholders, that are owned by existing or leased by existing, lessees. I mean, it's not going to be a path that I wish to pursue and nor any other members of the committee. So.
Okay, last question.
Follow up. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I hope that this body could discuss and just consider, rather than having the provision of removing the first right of refusal from the leaseholders, the current leaseholders now, I am hoping that we can talk about perhaps a way to structure the bill so at least there's an ability for the railroad to notify the current leaseholders of the railroad's intent to sell and at least provide something reasonable, like 60 days, for those leaseholders to do their own due diligence and have an opportunity to put a down payment on the property. I mean, these are the folks that are currently utilizing the property. They have an inherent interest to see who is going to be the eventual owners of the property. One would argue that, maybe in normal circumstances they might have an inherent right to the property, or at least I don't want to remove the right for them to at least have an opportunity to be notified of the railroad's intent to sell and at least given an opportunity to respond in a reasonable amount of time. So that's just my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Von Imhoff. I see Senator Coghill's staff taking notes. Further questions for Mr. Cook. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just help me a little bit with the structure of the railroad and the past practices, because I don't deal with it very often, but why doesn't the railroad come forward? And, for instance, I'll use that subdivision up in Fairbanks that you said was sitting idle because you have to do a long-term lease. Why doesn't the railroad come forward with tracts that they would like to subdivide or sell off versus requesting a blanket authority?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we have to have an offer in hand to bring to you to do that. So, that's what we have right now, and it just is not something that, that people have been interested in. We haven't brought you any deals. We bought you three in since 1983. So, there just doesn't appear to be interest in the market in pursuing that. So having the ability to do that, and get back, respond in a timely manner, that's why we're asking for, the removal of legislative approval. And just one follow-up I wanted to add to Senator Von Imhoff's question about notification, that there are currently notification provisions for any lease or sales, so any of those existing folks would be notified under Section 6. But did I answer your question there, Senator Stedman? Or?
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
No, close, but let me try to reword it a little bit. It's fairly common for somebody to express interest in a particular parcel to a landowner and then the landowner to, consider the sale and then come forward. So So what you're saying is you just have, there's a requirement in statute that blocks you from doing that because you need a viable offer in hand to even have the discussion. It seems, if that's the case, it seems to me like that's a pretty minor change that might be considered that would then enable the railroad to come forward and tell the legislature they want to, for instance, in Fairbanks, look at developing and subdividing off a particular track versus trying to pre-sell everything.
And again, to the chair, Senator Steadman, I understand what you're saying, but for example, on the Chena Landings example that we brought you here, let's say that the board determined that it wanted to sell that land, you know, right now, and there's a market right now with the F-35s coming into town and some of the other activity that we have and just high demand for riverfront property in general, you know, were we to sponsor that legislation to, say, obtain permission to sell that block of land, you know, we have to hope that we can get a bill introduced, get it through session, both sides, get it signed, you know, into law. And, you know, that may happen in one legislature or one session. It may happen in the next session. You may get caught in the second year and you got to start all over again. But, you know, markets don't wait that long. A lot of times, and opportunities, you know, don't often have, you know, years. You know, sometimes deals come together and, you know, they can close in a brief matter of time. So, you know, in terms of realizing and maximizing some of those opportunities, that time delay, you know, will cost the railroad money, or just eliminate opportunities altogether.
Follow-up, Senator Steadman?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with most of what was said. I think sometimes a developer gets out ahead of the market a little bit and gets himself into position versus waiting till it's spoon-fed into his lap, particularly in a situation like this where the entity can hold a property as potential development land for quite some time, years. So as the concern I have is how much, you know, as a policy call, how much flexibility does the legislature want to give them? Complete blanket authority? Or more along the lines of incremental. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Steadman. Senator Hughes.
And along that same point, thank you, Madam Chair, this more nimble process to respond more readily in a more timely manner, has this been proposed before? And if so, or why hasn't been proposed before 2017? Has there been... I'm not aware, and I'm rather new and don't know, as someone mentioned, that much about the Alaska Railroad Corporation and land holdings, but has there been a trust factor problem, or can you just tell us historically why 2017 and why not 20 years ago?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you. That is a very interesting question, and I guess I will give you my take on it, having been on the board since 2009. But if you go back and look at some of the legislative history and just talk to folks that have been around for a long time, there were a variety of reasons, I think, that these restrictions were put into place. Had to do with where the land went, if it was going to go to DNR, the railroad. But I think, to boil it down real simply, I think that there has been a great deal of fear, I guess, between management and certain board members over time that there would be political pressure to dispose of income-producing lands on kind of sweetheart, below fair market value deals. And, you know, our intent is not to sell our best income-producing lands. Our intent is to have a full toolkit to monetize our lands and, you know, have the maximum value. And by having a lease-only policy, we prevented ourselves from doing that. My background, again, I have a fairly large amount of experience in commercial, real estate development. And, you know, having a lease-only policy, you've just tied one hand behind your back. We own quite a bit of land here in Fairbanks. Our company does. And sometimes we lease, sometimes we sell. But, you know, it's been kind of an educational effort, and frankly, there's been a lot of requests from your constituents to be able to have the ability to purchase, you know, some of these lands, both residential, you know, and commercial. So it's been an educational process, and it's been an involvement, you know, evolving kind of process for the board to understand that we're, you know, and to bring management and the staff along too, where we're all in alignment, that we really do need a full toolkit. And doing that, I mean, we need to be able to have the fortitude on when to say no. And when a deal makes sense, you do it. And when it doesn't, you don't. But some of that fear, I think, is a large, you know, reason why it's happened till now. But I mean, we're not afraid. We're ready to do this, and we're ready to be able to generate money to put back into our properties to be able to, you know, do things like the Anchorage Edge development, which is going to be, you know, a beautiful development, there in, downtown Anchorage. So we need to be able to generate funds to be able to do those types of investments to earn, you know, more money and really maximize the value of our land.
Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to see Aklutna, which has been a wonderful community partner in our area, their support for this. But do you think the structure is in this? Because you could say your present board wouldn't undergo any political sweetheart kind of deals, but do you think the structure is in place that no matter in future years who's sitting in the boardroom, this provides the needed protection from political sweetheart deals?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, I believe it does, because first off, there's public notice requirements, there are appraisal and fair market value requirements, so we either have to get an appraisal from an MII appraiser or a competitive bid. Lastly, there is a reporting requirement to the legislature that we report all of the transactions during the year regarding land sales. So you all will still receive notification every year of any disposals that the railroad's done. So I believe, you know, that there's adequate safeguards in there, especially with the competitive bid, MAI appraisal requirements and the public notice requirements to make sure that people are policing this. And believe me, the public keeps an eye on this type of stuff as well. And you know, so we've got a lot of good people that'll be out here watching this process and making sure that it operates like it's supposed to.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Would you then support language that said you could not dispose of land unless it was sold at fair market value?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think that language, I thought that language was in there, or competitive bid, and that's another way that you can do that. I mean, sometimes you've got, if you look at the railroad's holdings, you've got remote parcels that are, you know, the appraisal process may not be the best way to get there. And other state entities do this as well. Well, you'll go ahead and do a competitive bid process. So, you know, to me, having the flexibility to do either of those two things, you know, is important.
Senator Wilikowski.
What's the total amount of land that you have, and what's the value of that land?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I believe we have about 36,000 acres of it, of land, and some of that's in big, huge reserves like, you know, Curry and Healy and some of those areas. So the value is, I mean, that part, I guess, it's impossible to say. I mean, there's so much land, I don't think anybody could give you a guess in the aggregate value, you know, of all the lands that we have. It depends on what they'd be used for and highest and best use. I mean, I would not even want to try to attempt to make a guess at that. You know, and I would tell you, Senator Wilikowski, too, with regard to your question on the appraisal, there is a fair market value requirement in Section 5, and like I say, our fair market value, you know, fair market value for us would be MAI appraisal or competitive bid. But in any event, I would not be able to really give you any kind of estimate with any kind of precision on the total value of the land holdings.
Senator Wilikowski.
I'm just wondering if would you support some sort of a cap that says you can sell land if it's of less than a certain value without having to go to the legislature?
through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no. You never know, especially with holdings this big. I mean, I say this in my own company, and I'd really say it at the railroad, is you never know, you know, what kind of deal is going to walk through the door. So, you know, to put some sort of cap or limitation on there, when you just never know, you know, what will happen. I think putting some of these curbs in place is the reason that there's only been three deals brought to the legislature since the railroads owned it. So, no, to me, the protections that are in there and the public notice requirements, the reporting requirements, and the fair market value requirements are sufficient. But, I think it's problematic to try to put some sort of dollar limitations. An amount of money that's material in Healy is a lot different than an amount of money for land that's material in Anchorage. So, we've got a real diverse real estate portfolio, and I'd be real reluctant to see that happen.
Senator Wilkowski.
I just have some concern that 36,000 acres, it's got to be hundreds of millions of dollars in value, and I just have a little bit of concern over just the legislature completely giving up control over disposing of that land.
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I know there's other entities that don't have to come to the legislature to dispose of land. So, I mean, here you've got a board of directors, and, you know, we have fiduciary obligations and you have public notice requirements, but, we are, frankly, right now, there's nothing to prevent DNR or DOT from doing that. And I guess I'd ask why we were any different. You've got three different agencies and two don't have to worry about that and we do. So, we do have a fiduciary responsibility. We do have to public notice. Our board meetings are public noticed. Any of these transactions would be publicly noticed. Adjacent, landowners would be, the current lessees would be noticed as part of the process. So, I'm not understanding the board would do something. I think it's going to do what's in the best interest of the corporation and fulfill its fiduciary obligations.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is there anything that would prohibit the railroad from selling, let's say, the terminal in Seward or the tunnel in Whittier or some other large asset to a private company, coal company, cruise ship company? Is there anything that would prohibit that from happening under this bill? Or the entire railroad, for that matter? I mean, could you sell the entire railroad under this to a private organization?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would have to defer on your question. I believe that I don't know that we are not selling land. We can't sell land that is part of the used for operations or anything like that. So I'd have to defer on that to some of the other individuals that are online here to answer that question. But the short answer is no. But I can't tell you the specifics of how that happens. So in there, but I know that's not possible to sell off our track or terminals or any of those items.
Okay, I have two more committee members with questions, and I have two more people online from the corporation, both the president and vice president, who are available. So moving on, Senator Von Imhoff has a question for Mr. Cook.
Thank you. So, Mr. Cook, are there any parcels of land that the railroad has identified that currently has railroad tracks running through them?
No.
Okay.
We haven't identified, other than the two parcels that we discussed, which is Tri-Valley and Cheetah Landings, and actually a third, which would be some land transfers with DOT, there's no transactions that we'd, immediately contemplate other than those.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So, but at some point in the future, assuming that this land sale starts to gain momentum, there could be tracts of land that the railroad would want to sell that the track actually runs through. Is that correct?
I there may be land adjacent to the tracks, but, I mean, there's a 100-foot right-of-way that there'd never be anything sold inside of, ever. So.
Okay. So,
Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you. So the question, as you know, there's another bill traveling through the legislative body right now regarding right-of-way permit fees or user fees and so forth. So if land under this new bill of 86, if this bill goes through, do you feel that the railroad will want to at least have part of their sales, some type of agreement or addressing potential user fees that the railroad would want to charge the new landowner?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I can't see that, I mean, a sale of land would be a sale, a user fee wouldn't be part of that. I mean, to the extent any land would be subject to user fees or there's any kind of recorded documents, you'd find that in a title search, but I guess I don't, that wouldn't normally be part of any kind of sales document. It certainly isn't when you buy a house. You have recorded, you know, you have recorded easements and your right-of-ways and things like that are on there, but that's typically not part of any kind of sales process that I could foresee.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff?
Yes. I guess what I'm asking in specific is that there is another bill where we are addressing the right-of-way user fees, and maybe I'm calling it the wrong thing, with some private landowners here in my district, and we are trying to come to an agreement with that, and I'm just curious to see how that practice that the railroad is doing now may affect future land sales with future landowners in the similar manner that's happening now.
Well, the right-of-way itself and any areas that are go through there that are potentially under dispute, that'll never be sold. But you know, to the extent one of the adjacent landowners has some sort of permitting rights for a garden or something else, you know, those, I mean, as I recall, and I can't remember where, you know, things were at, I believe a solution ran out. It's kind of a separate issue, but, you know, my understanding was that those rights were assignable and, you know, any individual that had those rights would need to assign those when they sold the land. But as far as anything having to do with our land, it has, I mean, we've got a right-of-way or an easement through there which will never be sold, so I don't think the two are related. What you're talking about is somebody else that has an adjacent piece of land that enjoys, you know, rights within that right-of-way, and those that's a separate, that's a totally, you know, separate issue that individual would get an assignment of that permit and do that when they were selling their piece of property.
Senator Von Imhoff, we do need to focus on this bill. You're certainly able to question the railroad on other legislation when that legislation comes up. Senator Stedman? Yes. Excuse me.
I wanted to make a comment
Reneva.
To that, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Senator Von Imhoff, I spoke with Representative Kopp yesterday, and he has come to an agreement with the railroad and is satisfied with the agreement that he's come to with them, and he is supporting this bill.
Senator Stedman, Mr. Cook is still on the line, and you have a question for him?
Yeah, and I suppose it would be a better question about a little better background in the history of creation and the management of the railroad, but it seems to me when most entities get in a financial pinch like the state, they sell off divisions and downsize their footprint, restructure, what have you. Why do we even own a railroad? Why aren't we the ones selling the whole bloody thing, lock, stock, and barrel? Land and all. That's something that I think should be asked the finance. This isn't the finance table. I recognize that. But if it's a hindrance for development and there's, you know, multi-million dollars worth of assets, I think we ought to look at changing the state's footprint and turning some of the stuff into cold, hard cash.
Sounds like a bill you could offer, Senator Stedman.
An amendment at finance, Madam Chairman.
Okay, there you go. Do you?
But it's a serious question, you know.
Yes, sure.
Why do we own a railroad, and why aren't we liquidating some of this stuff so we can get it in the private hands and get it developed?
Well, if there are no further questions, No further questions for Mr. Cook. We do have the president of the railroad, Bill O'Leary, online. Mr. O'Leary, welcome to the Resources Committee. If you'd put yourself on the record and give us your thoughts.
Certainly. For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the president and chief executive officer of the Alaska Railroad. And you're looking for thoughts related to Senator Sedman's question?
Any testimony you have on this piece of legislation or further comments on any of the questions you've been hearing?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have no further comments. I think Board Chair Cook has done a very able job of explaining the railroad's position on this.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We also have Jim Kubitz online, vice president at the railroad. Mr. Kubitz, if you'd put yourself on the record, give us your comments on the bill, and any of the questions that have been asked.
Certainly. My name is Jim Kubitz, vice president of real estate and facilities for the Alaska Railroad. And I like Mr. O'Leary here. We're just here to answer questions and help out. Our chairman has done a good job of, I think, introducing the bill and explaining most of the things that folks had questions about, but we can help out and supplement anything that you may ask us to do.
Committee members, any questions for the railroad president or vice president? All right, seeing none, Andy Berend is also online. He's with the railroad, also available for questions if anyone has any. All right, seeing none, we'll move on to general public testimony. I have two folks here. First, Bruce Bustamante with the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce is online. Mr. Bustamante, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank
Great.
You, Madam Chair.
Well, welcome. If you'd identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony on the bill.
Yes, my name is Bruce Bustamante. I'm the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify to the Senate Resources Committee on this bill. I'll keep my testimony brief on it, but I'm here to voice the support of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Senate Bill 86, as it's structured as a means to encourage more real estate development on the Alaska Railroad land within Anchorage and really throughout the entire rail belt. And this is an issue that our organization, the Anchorage Chamber, has been fairly engaged with, and that is the Anchorage Bowl land use map, and you know, reviewing and providing recommendations back to the municipality, and for the folks on our board and within our membership that worked in that process, we see that there is a shortage of usable land, and particularly land used for or zoned for industrial use, and not knowing, to be quite honest, how the railroad land will be zoned. We see this as a good opportunity in freeing up more real estate for development, and I thought Chairman Cook, I certainly learned a lot from his testimony from the commercial real estate side, and certainly agree that, you know, if you have to move quickly on some of these to be competitive, and you know, we see a lot of benefits really in supporting this bill, and I'm here to voice that support. Also, from our understanding, it also provides an advantage in working with the municipality of Anchorage in facilitating land swaps in a more expeditious manner. So, for a lot of the reasons that have been covered on this, that really encourage providing more available real estate for development, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce is in support of Senate Bill 86.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bustamante. Any questions for Mr. Bustamante? All right. Seeing none. Next online is Dave Hansen, also from Anchorage. Mr. Hansen, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. My name is Dave Hansen. I've been involved in the profession of land management and natural resource development for the last 40 years, and I have worked with many rural areas on subdivision development, and so I'm sympathetic to some of the things I'm hearing. Also, I worked with Representative Talrico when he was mayor on several projects up in the Healy area. Generally, conceptually, I'm very supportive of this bill. The Alaska Railroad's in a position that's almost like a native allottee is, where they couldn't do anything without the Bureau of Indian Affairs giving them approval, and that has changed much over time. But the railroad is sort of in a unique situation as being a semi-autonomous body and not really a part of the administration under the governor directly, having their own board of directors and so forth. So I'm sympathetic to what the railroad is trying to do here very much. Also, it's very clear that if you want to develop a subdivision, you've got to be able to give ownership of the land to the owner of the lot or the lessee of the lot so he has equity against which he can get his home loaned or his building loaned. We've run into that with many villages who wanted to just do long-term leases but found that both the value went way down and also that there were fewer takers because people want to own the land. I have, however, two very big concerns. One is the first right of refusal question brought up by Senator von Imhoff, and that is that it's one thing for a current board or a current president to say, this is our intent, we'll take care of that. But it's another thing over time to have absolutely no assurance that that will be the case as personnel change and circumstances change. It's just the way life is. So it seems to me you would want to keep some kind of first right of refusal right for the existing lessee with some limited time period so it doesn't hold up things forever, whether it's 90 days or 120 days, I couldn't say. But I do think that's a very valid point that should be thought about and talked about so that somebody doesn't have their, even though they continue to have their lease rights, they may be waiting for the chance to buy this land that they put all the sweat equity and money into. And to have that opportunity taken away from them is something worth really considering. The second thing is I'm hearing a lot of hesitation, a lot of concern from the committee. And it may be that rather than going forward with this bill as valid as it is conceptually, that you might want to just apply it to a couple of parcels and try it before you apply it to the whole 36,000 acres. What I'm thinking is have it applied at Chena Landing in the Tri Valley land, and maybe there are a couple of other parcels, so that those could go ahead without being held up by the legislature anymore. But it would also give you a chance to observe how this really would work and whether the concerns you're concerned with will be addressed. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Hansen. Any questions for Mr. Hansen? All right, seeing none, thank you. All right, Senator Coghill, any further comments about the bill?
No, I think all around the questions, the testimony have been pretty good. I think it gives us stuff to ponder. I don't know that I'm in a great big hurry for this, but I think from the selling of the railroad, stock, lock, stock, and barrel, all the way down to giving them the right to manage certain parcels, I think that's a good discussion. And, you know, it's a fair argument that some of the agencies that have the right to manage, sell property also have to come to us for their budgets. And so it's something that we just have to continually balance as we have a corporation that is, like you said, semi-autonomous. I appreciate the board bringing it forward. I'm glad to carry it along. We'll do our best to find some answers to some of these questions and find a pathway forward.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for bringing the bill forward. Thank you to everyone who testified, especially Mr. Cook, who took a very long series of questions. So with that, we will set the bill aside. I will leave public testimony open on it, however. So that concludes our meeting for today. We will stand adjourned. The time is 4:45 p.m.